It's the Reality TV Happy Hour with Jordan Parhar. Because you can't spell Parhar without R-H-A-P.
R-H-A-P.
Reality TV Happy Hour. Reality TV Happy Hour.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Reality TV Happy Hour. My name is Jordan Parhar, and as always on Monday nights during the BB18 season, I'm here with you with the live feed correspondents to break down everything that's going down in the Big Brother 18 house based on what's going down on the live feeds. Today, we've got the whole crew here, but we've got one person who's playing. You know, last week he was sick, and this week he's away, so I don't know how his connection's going to hold up, but we're going to try this out. He's in a hotel somewhere. I don't know. It's an undisclosed location. It's Taryn Armstrong, ladies and gentlemen. Taryn, how are you?
I'm currently sequestered. You know, I've been waiting to pop up in the Paris room, but they decided to ditch me at the last second. I don't know why.
Are you an exquester? Is Glenn there with you as well?
I wish. Then I'd have some great company, because I'm sure Glenn has tons of stuff to do in hotel rooms.
Yeah, I feel like if you were in there for 3 weeks, eventually you would kind of figure out how to... It would be one of two things. You would either like never want to go back there ever again, or you'd be able to entertain yourself for 3 weeks straight doing random things.
I'm convinced that Glenn is like a Zen master now, which is why we need him on the podcast.
Yeah, Glenn, if you're listening, or if anyone listening has connections with Glenn, please reach out to him. Second on the panel tonight is a man who thought it would be okay if he took a two-hour nap before this podcast and get away with being able to cover everything. But
right.
Then a bunch of breaking news happened. It's Brent Wolgamott, ladies and gentlemen. Brent, how are you?
Quiet, Jordan. I'm watching the feeds right now. Stuff's going on. No, and really. What Jordan said is true. I thought I was caught up in everything. Everything seemed pretty set in the house after the house meeting last night. Frank knows he's going home, and I thought I was safe, and I wasn't watching the feeds for like an hour or two before we started tonight, and then everything blows up on me. It's so typical of Big Brother.
Oh, man. It's expect the unexpected, Brent. And last but not least, I don't think I have ever heard him this quiet ever, and it's because ever since he's been on the call with us, he's just been laser-focused on what's been going down on the feeds. It is Alex Kidwell, ladies and gentlemen. Alex, how are you?
I'm good, Jordan. I'm going to try not to be distracted, but, I mean, you know, we were doing a podcast about things that, you know, the BB Think Tank a while ago, and I was all advocating for the secret room, and here we are. So you'll forgive me if I'm riveted to what's going on right now. Hamster tunnels, secret rooms, this is what I like. This is fun.
This is very fun. Not stuck on a podcast with Adam Pock tonight, Alex. So you can feel free to speak your mind. It'll be a good time.
Hey, he shouted you out last night.
No, Adam. I'm just kidding. I love Adam, but Adam was like throwing shade at me.
Yeah, it wasn't Adam, a good shout out.
Yeah, right. Adam was like, he was talking smack. I was like, well, Adam, we had beers in New York. I was so blindsided by that. So now, shout out to Adam. I still love you, even though you're talking crap about me, man. Also, quick update for people watching us live on the Google Hangout. Well, you guys can see, but people listening to the audio version of this, Rob Cesternino wondered if I was getting the Paul haircut this week. I have not gotten it yet, although I am getting a haircut on Wednesday. So stay tuned to that, guys. Just to set things up for you guys, if you are new to this show, this is the show where we talk about live feeds all the time for Big Brother 18. So if you do not want to know any spoilers, now is the time for you to check out, because we are going to be talking about that all evening long. Should be a really fun show. We're live on a Google Hangout. We are also, so if you want to go to robinswebsite.com, you can check that out. We got the chat room going there. If you could just scroll down on the main page, you'll be able to see that and chat with lots of people that are watching us live. You can also get your questions in, because we are an interactive show. Don't know how many questions we're going to get to tonight, because I have to bounce out early because I've got some stuff going on tonight. But if you want to get those in, you never know, we could We'll probably get a few in at the end of the show. You can tweet me. I'm at Jordan Parhar. Use hashtag RaHappyHour or leave a comment on the YouTube video below. And with that, let's jump right into it, guys. Brent mentioned it already. The veto ceremony was today. Taryn, was the POV used?
No, it was not.
No, it was not? Okay, the veto was not used. And as Brent said, looks like Frank is going to go home. He knows that. And is that's the consensus there, Brent?
Yeah, not only does he know it, but they had a house meeting last night that we can talk about. And, you know, thank God, finally someone on this season decided to step up and tell somebody the truth for once. And I think actually, I mean, I don't think it's going to benefit him right here, but Paulie was man enough to tell Frank, look, dude, we want you out. You're going home. Frank really seemed to respect that, and it seemed to shut down a lot of the angst that was in the house. I think people could learn from that and do that a little bit more sometimes.
Okay, so we'll get into that house meeting in a little bit, but I think the big thing that for people watching live want to know about is this secret room business. We got some breaking news are happening now. There is some information as to what's been going down with that secret room and what the power is inside of that room. So, Alex, could you fill in the audience as to what we know at this hour?
Sure.
Yes, fill us in, Alex. We
yeah,
want to
okay.
know.
So this is all within the last, you know, 20 or so minutes. You know, Reddit and other places correctly guessed days ago that #211 was going to get you in there, and it was Paul who figured it out. He got a message on the phone that said, you know, from the time you hang up, after 5 seconds, the door will open basically kind of under the phone, and there's a tunnel that takes you to the Paris room, a little kind of like a crawl space. It's kind of cool. So, yeah, Paul figured it out. The first time he got it, he, you know, let it go, and then he was trying to figure out how to approach it. And he just kind of, like, couldn't wait anymore, I guess, because, yeah, there was a lot of people around, and he decided to just kind of go for it and just, you know, all of a sudden just made a dash for it, which is kind of funny to watch. But when he got in there, he found that it wasn't about who gets there first, like we all probably thought. It's actually a situation where, basically, if you can get in there, you're going to be given an equal opportunity at a second chance in this game. There are 12 envelopes in the Paris room. Everyone who goes in there can take an envelope, and the envelopes are not to be opened until people are evicted. Each time someone with an envelope is evicted, when they go and talk to Julie, they'll open their envelope, and they'll find out if they have a one-way ticket, which is a normal Big Brother experience, or the round-trip ticket, of which there is one, and the round-trip ticket will be good for a second life in this season of Big Brother.
So once they get this envelope, do they have to keep it a secret to other people, or can they go and tell other people in the house, hey, you want to just go over to the phone for a second and type in these specific numbers? No reason, just go over there. Do we know about that?
Yeah, it's totally up to – like it was totally Paul's prerogative what he shared. The guy, the voice on the phone made that clear. They did – it was audible. You could hear what the voice on the phone was saying over the feeds. And so, yeah, Paul is, you know, able to share whatever he wants in that situation, but the envelopes have to stay sealed. Like, what you have in your envelope is totally an unknown factor, so it's kind of a, you know, a double-blind scenario in that nobody really has any leverage there.
There okay. is a before Paul left the room, he started to ask the question, can I say this is, or something like that, and then the feeds cut because he was talking to production, and then when he came out, there was a lot that he was saying that where like he wasn't lying about it. He was saying, I went in there, there were 12 envelopes, I picked one, I don't really know what's going on. So I assume that he was told when he asked that he wasn't allowed to lie and say that it was some sort of power, and that he had to tell the truth about the 12 envelopes. Otherwise, I don't see why he wouldn't have lied, because it doesn't behoove him to allow anyone else into that room or to give them any incentive to even try. And well, when Victor asked, can we still go up there, he's like, oh, I don't know, maybe.
Well, let me ask you this question then, because LunaC73 on Twitter said, has Paul figured out yet that if even one other person gets into the secret room, they'll all know he's lying about the prize? So obviously he must have lied about something, so do we know what it is and what he said?
Well, he was lying in the sense that he wasn't telling them everything. He was omitting a lot of stuff. He wasn't saying that other people could pick envelopes. What he said was, I went in there, there were 12 envelopes, I had to pick one, I'm not allowed to open it, and then I came out. And so they were like, well, what's going on? Like, he didn't say that other people are allowed to pick envelopes, that other people can still go into the room, but he didn't deny that fact either. So if they go in there, they'll realize, oh, he's not telling us everything.
That's the thing. It's like everyone's assumption is what our assumption was until this happened, which is that, you know, whoever gets in there first is going to win some kind of power. So really, Paul just did nothing to dissuade that. He just kind of said, like, well, I did this and I got this. And anytime somebody asked, like, well, can somebody else go in there and get that? He's like, I don't know. Like, I was just like running around screaming. You know what I mean? Like, so he played that off at least.
Okay.
Like,
so I have one more question before we move on.
Too well. Yeah.
But before we move on, so Julie said on the show that the twist would be in play for the next 4 weeks. But you guys are telling me that everybody's going to pick an envelope, and one of those envelopes is a round-trip ticket. So let's say that the round-trip ticket goes to somebody, I don't know, out of thin air, like Pauly, who is likely not to be evicted during the next 4 weeks. Is the twist then suddenly a bust and there's no buyback?
I mean, I would assume that, yeah, that it wouldn't work if it's only in play for 4 weeks. I mean, I don't think. I mean, Taryn, have we gotten that information at this point?
I have to assume that the 4 weeks is there for a reason, because there's 12 envelopes. If Pauly gets the envelope and he gets evicted at final three, he can't come back into the game.
Exactly, right. Yeah. On finale night, like, it's a double elimination bracket with this one player now. You got to get him twice on one night. Yeah, right.
So, I assume that after 4 weeks, it's going to come out of play and they have some sort of contingency for what will happen if if it's not used.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think.
It seems like a bit of a drag, though. I mean, first of all, I don't like it that it's like typical America. Everybody gets a prize. You know, you don't even have to be first. You know, as long as you participate, you get a trophy too. So that sucks. Number one. I will give them props for at least showing this on the feeds. I thought for sure they would cut it when they got in. So at least I'll give them credit for that. The fact that they're allowing them to tell other people or not, that's a fail. They should make them keep it secret upon penalty of eviction like Big Brother Canada does. And I don't know, I had another point, but this is such a mixed bag. Like, if you're going to do something that's this big with a secret room and a twist, like, I want to know that it's used. I would rather, I didn't like that it was Paul, but I would at least be cool with Paul getting, like, a secret power for being the first one to figure it out. I mean, what if the round trip ticket goes to somebody like, you know, Natalie, who was saying 211 but didn't have the energy to go up to the phone and punch in the code in the first place? What if that happens?
So just quickly, for people who haven't been watching the feeds too closely and just listen to this show for updates on what's happening, what is the significance of this code that worked? And I saw some people in the chat saying that it wasn't 211, it was actually 74977 or something like that.
Huh?
So,
really?
I don't know. Taryn,
no way.
Taryn, do you know what the code was, and do you know what the correlation was?
Yeah, I'm actually not positive about that.
I don't know what it was for sure, because what Paul said was he looked at the departure board and he saw the Paris flight and he added the numbers together. And
so
he,
it spells Paris?
Something like that. So that gave him the code. But he might have been lying when he said that, because why would he tell them the code? Why is he telling them the code? But, I mean, right after that, Victor got in and I believe Corey also got in. So it seems like that may have been the truth. So I'm still not sure what the numbers are, but that appears to be the logic behind the code.
Okay, we got some
room
in the chat.
Alphanumeric for Paris, yeah.
Yes, so 72747 is the code.
Oh, so that's what they mean, call Paris, as in P-A-R-I-S.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, so that's what it looks like it was. So did Paul randomly just do this, Alex? Like, I you know, we were talking a little bit in the pre-show. So it sounds like production gave them a tip that there is some sort of secret clues or something happening in the house. Is that how Paul figured this out? Like, how, or did he just randomly stumble upon the phone and just say, "Oh, I'm just gonna try doing this," and he got it right?
No. After stuff came up on the screen, it was a period of everyone looking around and, like, studying things and everyone trying various combinations of the phone. It was only a matter of time, it seemed like. Once production put that out there, it was like, you know, the game was afoot. as the great Tarzan once said.
It was very much like it came on the screen. Like there's a secret room. There's secret clues. Look for the clues. It was, you know, the mad treasure hunt. Everybody's running around looking for the idol. And it was going to be found. And there was no way that anybody was going to find this and keep it a secret because they were all just hanging around the phone booth because they knew that that was what it was because they could see that there was some sort of door and they were being told stop that. So they're like, well, clearly it's there. Clearly this is where he input the code. They were all just hanging around, and there was no way that anybody could have gotten in there without letting on that that it was some sort of secret room, which kind of negates the entire point of the treasure hunt in the first place, because they're all just going to get through the envelopes now. I don't know why they alerted them on the screen when they could have just kept subtly introducing clues until some one person finally found it, and that like we could have had this as something that was going on in the game, that people were finding it out, they were getting their envelope, and so on and so forth. But instead, we had this thing where it's really just everybody reach inside, and one of you is going to get a buyback.
Also, the emphasis on secret in secret room is lessened somewhat when, like, for like 2 and 3 nights, like people are hearing the sounds of construction coming from behind one particular wall upstairs. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that secret anymore. You know, we know where the bridge to Terabithia is. It's right here.
The bridge to Terabithia. That was a good book. well done with that reference, Alex. So I want to ask you guys at this point. The Paul thing had just happened, like, right before we came on this show. Has anybody else, from what you guys can see, and I know it's tough because you guys are on this podcast with me right now, from as far as you can tell, has anybody else also gotten into that room?
Well, CBS love us because they went to fish, like, right when we went live. But, yeah, go ahead.
As I mentioned, Victor went in after Paul, and then right before the feeds cut, I believe we saw Corey also get in the room. So we have no reason to believe that nobody is going to – like, people were already – after Victor went in, they were like, Paul, just tell us the code. Just let us go in. Yeah. So everybody's going to get in there. Everybody's going to get an envelope.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really at that point. Like, you know, Corey is standing at the phone, and Victor's got to come out sometime, and the door will open, and everyone's standing right there. You know what I mean? It's probably all happening right now, and that's why feeds are still on fish.
Okay, so there we go. So interesting, and good timing that the feeds are on fish while we are we're recording this live. Okay, so let's just unpack this here then. Do we, I know Brent was talking about it a little bit. Now that we've had some time to process this some more, Brent, would you prefer to have this, where it's sort of this random buyback system that is going to be going on for 4 weeks where it's basically Russian roulette every single week when someone goes out and we have no idea whether or not they're going home? Or would you rather the room hold some sort of power like a diamond power veto or like a coup d'etat or some other thing that we haven't seen yet? What's your thoughts on this, Brent?
Well, I'm of two minds about it. I'm trying to assemble my thoughts about it because it's just happening right now. But as I said, I don't like, this is so typical of Big Brother US. Like Big Brother Canada, it's slow, it's methodical. We all remember Allison skulking about, trying to find the clues to the room, trying to act natural while she's at the pool, and it was very, very fun feeds, and obviously she was the only one who picked up on it. On the other hand, you have Big Brother US, which it's like a total man. Like they just like shove the clue on the screen and it's like, like they just, we gotta get through it. And then boom, they shot their wad in like 5 seconds. Like, I mean, it's all over now. Like, who cares? You know, they're all gonna get a damn clue. And you don't even have to have any merit. Like, you could be a totally worthless person who doesn't understand riddles or codes or puzzles or anything, and you're still gonna get a damn card because that's just how Big Brother US is.
Really quickly, a shout out to the couple people who tweeted us because I had forgotten. But right, the big thing that Paul did kind of mislead people about is that when he said round trip ticket, he didn't imply it was anything other than an actual trip to Europe. So that, like, he really didn't say anything beyond ticket. He's like, well, there was, you know, regular tickets, and when you get but you can't open it until, like, he was honest about everything. But, yeah, again, guilty by omission. He doesn't say anything about how it impacts the game. He's just calling it a round-trip ticket. And then he also did say, well, your boy loves Europe. So that is implying, you know what I mean? Like,
right, how many times did he say friendship?
Let me address this as well, too. The fact that everyone is going to quickly be aware that the fact that anybody could be holding a round-trip ticket at any given point when they are evicted is just going to be something else that gums up the works of the game, because obviously you're not going to leave a mean goodbye message or have it out with somebody who's about to be evicted or who is your enemy if you think that there is even a ghost of a chance that they could actually come back. And now that everybody has these tickets in their lap, you're going to be extra doubly careful of that. So I really don't like twists like this where you just put it out there and everybody has a chance, because it messes with the game. I would rather they have given Paul, who was the first person and the most motivated person that I have seen to figure it out, a power that rewards them for their stick-to-itiveness. Instead, it's just everybody gets a damn trophy. Ugh.
Here's what they should have done. In the room, there's only four envelopes because it's only valid for 4 weeks anyway. The first person in there, they get to take an envelope. If they're able to do it secretly, and they shouldn't have announced it on the television screen.
Right.
They should have let them find these clues naturally. And they tell the first person in there, hey, look, if you're the only person that picks an envelope, it's guaranteed buyback if you're evicted within the next 4 weeks. For every other person that comes in here, your chance is diminished by the percentage of, you know, now if there's two people that get envelopes, now you only have a 1 in 2 chance, three people, four people, so on and so forth. But there's still only four envelopes. So the first four people are the only four people that get those things. And then it's a situation where, like, maybe he tells his allies and he gets them to get some envelopes. Maybe he tells nobody and he's got a buyback and he hopes that nobody else figures it out. You know, there's a lot of situations that can arise from that. I don't understand, why do we need 12 if it's only valid for 4 weeks? Why are we announcing it to everyone so it's going to be obvious and everyone's just going to grab an envelope? There's a lot of stuff that's just messy with this. And like the way that they set up this twist, it was like they assumed that the players would know what kind of twist it was and would try, like, when Paul, here's the thing, when Paul finds out that he gets the code right, he's told, listen, make sure you go into this room secretly, because if people find out what the secret room is, that's disadvantageous to you, because so on and so forth. But he doesn't know that what's in that room is what it is. He thinks it's a power where if he gets in there first, he gets the power. So he's not going to risk leaving and then coming back and going in secretly and having somebody else get that code first. So
right.
Obviously he's going to do it in front of everyone. So, like, they were assuming that people understood what the twist was before they were even revealed, before it was even revealed what it was. It just doesn't make, it was so messy.
Yeah, or what about if
right,
you
and
really,
I have...
sorry, I was just going to say, if you really want to do an envelope per person, you know, why not, you know, take a page out of the Yankee Swap POV that everybody loves and make it a situation where you can read all the envelopes and pick the one you want. You know what I mean? That'd be kind of a scramble if multiple people go in the room at once because they're all like fighting over envelopes. Maybe one says you get a chance to come back in the game and they get like progressively worse. Like that Survivor Challenge where like somebody gets a steak and somebody gets a glass of water and you have to like go on down the line. You know what I mean? Like maybe the last one is like a shitty costume and like, but like you have to take a card if you enter the room or something. You know what I mean? So like, I think like there's a lot of ways this could be workshopped a little better.
Alex, what is what are the odds that Frank is going to open up his envelope on Thursday night and it's going to say round trip?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a little risky now that, you know, hashtag Grodner exposed party was trending on Twitter.
That was trending on Twitter?
At least in my social circle. I don't know if it was like trending nationally or anything.
And can you explain hashtag Grodner exposed for the uninitiated?
Yeah, Grodner exposed party had to do with her liking a tweet from some fan that said something basically to the effect of I could never understand how someone could be a fan of Michelle and not be a fan of Frank. So like Grodner liking that like shows like some degree of favoritism. It's not great. And then you had like Michelle's sisters tweeting stuff like play fair, Allison, and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Well, was there any confirmation that this wasn't just Photoshopped? Because I think we can't just say like when I saw that I was just like, okay, come on, like
that's legit.
Is it legit?
I saw unlike the thing. Like I went to her account and checked, and like
and it's on the account.
Yeah,
she
liked
that
tweet. That's
she didn't even unlike it.
I heard she eventually unliked it. But,
maybe.
But I saw multiple different screenshots from like multiple different people's Twitters.
Yeah.
Okay. So
it was there when I checked.
I hope that Frank gets the round trip just to make things interesting. Wouldn't that be great, Brent?
Oh, that would be freaking wonderful. Like, I was bummed when I first came on. I was getting ready for this show, and I saw that the secret thing was happening, and I saw that Paul got into the room first, and I was like, damn it, because I know he's not going to help Frank. By the way, for those of you who are not uninitiated, or who are uninitiated to me lately, I've become a Frank fan, mainly because everyone else in the house is truly terrible right now. But I'm glad to see that at least he has a chance at this point. That's the only thing good about this twist.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to know like what this season has done? I hate twists. I hate Frank. I was dying inside for Frank to get this twist. Like, I wanted it to happen.
This is a weird experiment. I feel like most seasons, like there's a lot of seasons with dumb feeds, but I feel like this season in particular, like I'm getting dumber watching this stuff every like hour after hour, day after day. Like it's the kind of stuff where like I feel like my intelligence is lowering, my sense of humor is being dumbed down. Like I'm just thinking like, you know, who's gonna be left to entertain us? And then I'm like, anus. You know, it's really getting to that point.
I don't get that. I guess that joke has.
I don't get the joke either.
You'll have to explain that in the chat room or something. I was gonna say like, what the hell with Adam Pock last night and Rob like talking about how this is a great season? Like, in what universe is this a great season? What is he talking about?
I love Adam Pock. I said that Adam is a very nice guy. I can separate his own game from him in real life. But Brent, I think I'm with you on that one, man. I don't know. I mean, sometimes I feel like I really like this season, and then other times I hate it. So I guess maybe it was just a good night for Adam. That was a good episode last night, so I will give him a break. For you guys, I think it's different because you guys are watching Feast 24/7, whereas the average person isn't necessarily doing that. Guys, anything you want to talk about with this twist before we move on to other stuff we had planned for this evening? I think we covered it pretty well.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Alex, pipe up if Fish stops, and we can talk about some of that stuff a little bit more. But for now, we will move forward as planned. Brent, you mentioned the house meeting last night that I would like to talk about. And I will admit, I have not had a chance to listen to all of the podcasts from last night. It's been a very crazy, busy weekend for me.
Yeah, it was so good.
Was the end good? I need to check it out. But yeah, yes. it's been a crazy weekend for me. Alec Beal accidentally swallowed my contacts one night. I almost destroyed a gas pump with my delivery truck at work.
You did?
Yes, I did. So I did. I destroyed the front panel, not the entire pump. But yeah, if you don't follow me on Snapchat, you wouldn't miss that, I guess. JPAR21 on Snapchat. But it was on my Facebook. Crazy series of events. So the house meeting, was that covered last night on the podcast, Alex?
No.
No, because it hadn't happened yet.
Hadn't happened yet. Yeah. So, Brent, if you could explain, how did this start as a joke and then turn into a full-fledged house meeting?
Well, Frank said that he kept campaigning to James to get Davon on the block. And James, as is his wont, to want to, you know, entertain the losers in the house, and by that I mean, you know, lie to them that they have a chance when they really don't have a chance. He said, you know, if you can get the people together, you know, the majority of the house to show me that they'll vote out Davon, then I'll go along with it. And Davon got wind of this and said, you know, James, why are we entertaining Frank at this point? He's already lost the veto. He's out of the house. He's a loser. He doesn't have any allies. Like, why are we doing this? And he said, basically, don't worry, Mama, I got your back. It's even, you know, he's not going to be able to do this. And it eventually evolved into where they were all kind of up in the HOH room anyway. And Frank wanted to have the meeting, but they had to go get Paul. And some stuff happened with that, but that's not important. Basically, they all came together, sans Davon. She was downstairs. And Frank implored them. And then said, it was really awkward, by the way. I don't think they talked for like 5 minutes. And Frank said, I really want the veto to be used, and I want Devon to go up in my place. And no one would really say much to that, except for James, who said, well, I can't do anything unless Michelle uses the veto. And it eventually got to the point where eventually, like I said, Polly stepped in and said, you know, Frank, it's not going to happen. We're not going to vote out Devon. We want you out. And Frank actually seemed to take it pretty well. And he did get in a really fun jab at James and Nicole and said, well, I'm something to the effect of, I'm glad you have a backbone, unlike some people in this room. And, of course, Nicole is like, you know, SpongeBob with her teeth chattering, you know, wondering, like, if she's going to get found out or not for her double dealing.
She's, like, hiding.
She's such a rat. Hate you, Nicole.
Yeah,
anyway.
She's literally, like, crawling further under the covers as this conversation is happening.
God. Okay. So, like I said, that happened. And so Frank knows he's going home and he's going to get laid on Sunday when he gets home. So, and he's been telling everybody that. So, that's what happened last night.
Okay.
Beads
are back.
Michelle is in the Paris room by herself, sitting at a picnic at the picnic table. It's kind of funny to see Michelle at a picnic by herself.
That's so Michelle.
Oh man. Okay. So there we go. So Michelle has also gotten one. Looks like I wouldn't be surprised if you know, by the end of the evening, everybody will have
it. I'm not seeing a lot of envelopes left in that room, Jordan. I'm looking around for some blue pieces of paper, and I'm not seeing any. So
okay. So there we go. So they might all be taken.
They might be all gone.
Just mad dash. This little like hamster tunnel to get into the room, like. Could multiple people fit in that, Alex?
No, it's definitely, like, you can't pass somebody. You know, like, you could, but you would intersect. You know what I mean? So it's a crawl, and it's kind of like, it's supposed to look like an airport terminal, like a tiny airport terminal, and it's got, like, red, you know, like, kind of landing strip lights. It's got a cool little crawl space there.
And a very, very funny in retrospect message that's like, wait until the coast is clear and then press the button to open the door.
Do what now? Oh, too late.
And we're, by the way, I just want to say this really quickly, and I know you touched on this, Taryn. I can't blame Paul for not waiting. Like, if you are deciding between, you know, like if I leave here and somebody else gets the code and goes in, they're going to get some game-changing power. Screw it, I don't care if everybody knows I went in the secret room. I've got to go now. Like, you have to be the first person to get in there. I actually am kind of stunned that he gets no reward for that whatsoever. Not even an advantage. Like, literally, he has as much chance of getting the round-trip ticket as the person who walks in 12th.
Michelle.
I was about to call him dumb for walking away and leaving it open for other people to go in, and then when he finally does do the correct thing, he's punished for it.
Yeah, there's not like that much you can blame him for, because really,
right.
There's no indication that we had, that they had, that anyone has had, that there would be no benefit to getting in there first. I mean, it really did seem like this. Like, you know, an immunity idol, like most things in most strategic games, this is something where, like, the early bird gets the worm, and that's kind of how it should be. There needs to be some degree of an element that benefits, you know. Even if like, you don't like Paul, you got to appreciate the hustle, right?
I was all on board, exactly. I do appreciate the hustle, even though Paul has annoyed me lately. I just think that there should be some reward. I guess we're bitching about things that aren't going to happen, so I don't know why we're bitching about it. Like, we're talking about how it should be, how they can workshop it. Obviously, this is the way they decided to do it. I just don't understand why they didn't make it, which is how they've basically always done it, which is whoever figures out the riddle gets some sort of a power. Considering it was the Paris room, I would have bet money on the fact that it was a coup d'etat. I would have bet money on it. And now you're telling me that it's just some stupid 1 in 12 chance to come back into the game that they probably would have done anyway, even without this room? Like, come on, yo.
Imagine back in Big Brother All-Stars, they've got this the riddle, and what happens is when you guess the correct riddle, you get a token. And your token is good for one shot at getting the coup d'etat, and it's split with as many people as who gets the tokens, and you get as many guesses as you want.
And then Mike Boogie threatens Chicken George with his token, saying that he might come back into the house if you vote him out. And then Howie's the only one who doesn't get it because he's still stuck on Spool of Lies. Okay.
God, you know how many people guessed that one? I love it.
You know, as the person who pitched like some degree of like a variation of the Chance Time from Mario Party at our tank, this is like probably the closest thing Big Brother has ever done to that. But yeah, I mean, right. If for the next 4 weeks, like I'd almost rather see like 4 weeks from now, bring in those four people and like strap them to a giant roulette board and just do that or something. You know, that's more fun.
That would be much better. And then the other thing that we haven't talked about is what the producers are going to do, because if we go 4 weeks and none of these people go out. They don't have the buyback of those four that go out. They're kind of left hanging out to dry, are they not? Because
well, it seems to me like clearly what's going to happen is they're going to eliminate one of the double eviction nights. That's what has to happen.
I guess. I mean, right? So I guess I don't have to. Yeah.
I think in the past they've done stuff waiting in the wings here too, because you've still got that twist Julie talked about where fans are going to influence. That's not this. You know what I mean? That's still something to come. So who knows what they got still down
twist.
The pipe?
It's interactive.
Just in case. Yeah.
Yeah, reset, I see someone saying in the chat, too. I mean, I guess there's that. Ugh, I hope it's not that. So, yeah, stay tuned for this. Looks like everybody's got it at this point, and there will be plenty of coverage on RHAP talking about the secret room twist. I guess, let's see, it's Monday night, so on Wednesday night on Rob's podcast. I don't know if Rob is going to want to do some special coverage with this, if anything happens overnight, but stay tuned on Twitter. You can follow Rob. He's at Rob Sesternino. All of the information for our podcasts will be there. Let's keep talking about the rest of what we had planned for this evening, guys. In terms of this joke house meeting thing, so Frank kind of found out that he was going to go home, and then he went to Zakiya and Davon and talked about Nicole and said some truths about Nicole, but they didn't seem to really buy that. Taryn, what specifically was Frank telling Nicole?
Telling Nicole or telling
Day?
Sorry.
Telling Day and Z about Nicole. My bad.
Basically saying, like, look, I've had a deal with Nicole and Corey for a while now. I had a final two with her. They've been talking to me. You can't trust them. You need to go after Nicole. If I go, pull in Bridget, go after Nicole. She's the shady one. This is nothing really new to Day, who's always kind of distrusted Nicole. But it is kind of new to Z, and Zakiya has been kind of going back and forth and not really believing it. So, you know, and it's gotten to Polly and them now, and they're talking. Polly is saying, guys, this tells me very clearly that Frank has been working with Day this whole time. Obviously, Nicole is innocent.
I literally wanted to crawl through my computer and slap them. Like, in what effing universe do you really think? And I know the Big Brother house plays tricks on you people, but where do you get that Day is secretly working with Frank? You're dumbasses. You're idiots. Who are you people?
They've had three separate conversations this week, dude. Come on now.
To his credit, though, like this, he may just be saying this because it behooves him to protect Nicole and to target Davon. Nicole is part of his alliance, is a good target ahead of him. Davon is his next target. It doesn't work for him to have everyone suddenly get on board on the Davon train and target Nicole. That said, I'm not sure if he's doing this for strategy or if he genuinely believes it.
Yeah, this is like last night listening to Rob talk about James's game and what he was thinking about for his game. I'm like, he has no game. There is no game to talk about. What are like him thinking about what he was thinking during the HOH competition? He's not thinking about the game. He's thinking about getting a kiss from Natalie. Period. End of story.
James's thoughts about game ended the moment he was like on that rocket staring at Natalie's butt. I'm sorry. That was it. God. That was a wrap.
Wow, so, I forgot about that. Thank you for reminding me.
Night one.
Oh, man, night one.
Seeing, I'm, I'm seeing on Twitter that Corey was telling Paul he should have lied about the card and said there was only one, and Paul says he was told he couldn't lie about it.
Okay, so there we go. So update on that for you, and that makes sense. Speaking of James, Alex, I had some people tweeting me saying if we're going to talk about James throwing Davon under the bus, what specifically was that James did, and is his game crashing and burning even further than we already thought?
Yeah, I didn't see all of this. This was earlier today, but James basically is like blowing up Davon to Paulie and the guys in a way that, you know, a lot of people – go ahead, Taryn. What were you going to say?
This is how Paulie found out about the Nicole stuff.
Right, okay.
Is that James went and told – Paulie and them.
Day confides in James, and then James, right, he like goes, and it's really just the question of like, why is James going to what seems to be like a solid group of dudes that don't need him when Davon is clearly someone who needs him and is confiding in him with regularity, you know what I mean? So it's just a situation of James, I think he thinks he's in with the majority until he's not, you know, that's the story of James.
Isn't that the story of James? Like I was literally watching Sunday night's episode thinking I was watching Big Brother 17. Everything about, you know, how you got to go big or go home and how, you know, you can bounce checks in the Big Brother house and how I'm going to make a deal with somebody right in front of everybody. Like I literally did he learn? I got to calm down or I'll lose my voice. Did he learn nothing from last season? Did he learn nothing? He seems to take pride in the fact, Alex, you were saying last night that, well, maybe he doesn't take pride. No, I really do think he takes pride in the fact that he is an endurance comp beast who's willing to break his word to anybody at any given time. Like, does he not think that this is going to come back to bite him? Once they get Frank out of the house, they're going to be looking for a new target. And they're going to be – this majority alliance is going to be looking – especially the people in showmances are going to be people – or they're going to be looking at people like James who are – willing to win competitions because that doesn't involve everybody in the house, able to win competitions, that doesn't involve everybody in the house, and somebody who's willing to make a big move and doesn't care what everybody else thinks. Like, James is willing to break his word in front of the entire house to put up two people. What do you think he's willing to do to you? And he just that doesn't even enter his mind. It frustrates me to no end.
It seems like every week when we gather to do this roundtable show, the person who is in the best position in the house the week prior, just hot water the next week, every single time. And I don't know if that's
pour
just
hot gasoline all over their game every week.
Right, and
first.
I don't know if that's just Big Brother or in general, or if that's this season.
This season.
Okay.
If that holds, then I'm going to say publicly on this podcast that I think Paul is playing the best game currently. Hopefully we can watch his entire game go to shit next week.
I'm seeing on Twitter that Paulie is trying to throw out the idea, hey, let's have everyone open their envelopes and void all of them.
I see.
The old Brad called that on Redemption Island.
Such a Paulie thing to do.
That's not going to work. At least not on Frank and Bridget.
No, it's not. It was pretty quickly shut down, but I love that Paulie's trying to do that. It's exactly like Paulie's game. Like, it's like he knows that people have talked about how Derek wasn't fun, and he's like, I know what to do. I need to do what's not fun, and that's let's void all the twists.
Right, you know what else? He's also told people in the house about how Derek said to do this or Derek said to do that. Like, when Derek said, when you see a showmance, what do you do with that guy's girl? When I'm like, you people should be weary of Paulie right now. You really should be.
Yeah. Oh, you know, and on the subject of James – we've been having some good, you know, guests on the Thursday live shows. They had Vanessa talk and Cody talk. I wish we could get Mike Boogie on this Thursday show, only for the soundbite. I want him to stare into the camera and say, James, I did say you can bounce checks in the Big Brother house. Just because you can doesn't necessarily mean you should, bud. Like, that's what James fails to understand.
Just because you can, does that mean you should do it?
No, stop it.
Especially,
and you know what?
He has no incentive to do it either. He's just
what
doing
I was going
it for,
to say,
for giggles now.
Yeah.
About James really quickly, I was thinking this last night listening to the podcast. He made that promise for no reason whatsoever, and he didn't need to make it, Alex, as you correctly point out. But the other thing, too, beyond that, once you give your word to Bridget – and everybody in the house is coming to you saying, well, you know, you really need to put them up because what if Bridget wins the veto? James, all he has to do is say, you know what? I'm a man of my word. My word means something into this house because when I give you my word, it needs to mean something. Going forward, I told Bridget I'm not going to put her up. I'm not going to put her up. If she miraculously gets picked for veto and then she miraculously wins the veto and takes down Frank, then we'll evict Victor and we'll worry about them next week. I mean, the unlikeliness of that happening is so infinitesimal. He should have just said, I'm sticking to my word and that's that. But instead, he doesn't have the balls. He really doesn't. He talks about these big moves. I'm sorry, he does not. Every time he's made a big move, he's done it with the backing of the house behind him. He doesn't have the balls to just say to everybody, no, I'm not going to do that. This is what I'm going to do because it's my HOH, and I stood up there for 6 hours. And by the way, I haven't even gotten onto my rant. I'm sorry, Alex, you were so much nicer than I would have been last night about the fact that they decide to put the one endurance competition that's going to go hours that we live for during the blackout period. Like so often these quote-unquote endurance competitions last for like 20, 30 minutes or something like that, like the spinning one they had last year.
Let's make a deal.
This one went for 6 hours and we didn't get to see a lick of it. Shame on you, CBS. Shame on you.
Shame. Serious shame. Absolutely.
We need to call SEPTA Unella. Okay. So.
What is that? You
Except
guys
Unella.
What is
Game
that?
Of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, you know, the shame. Shame.
I'm sorry.
Shame.
Gosh, shame. I don't watch that show. I'm off watching
you,
The
Brent.
Flash.
Yeah, Brent,
right?
Shame on you.
Thank you, thank you.
You don't watch Game of Thrones?
It's just one too many things. I'm too busy with Dancing with the Stars and everything else.
Brent,
okay. I want to say, during the meeting last night, late last night, that Brent referenced, when Frank makes the comment about, you know, Paulie and Davon, I appreciate, at least you guys, you know, you tell it to me straight up, I appreciate that. You have a backbone, unlike some people in this room, and he's like,
right.
Clearly talking about mostly Nicole, but also James. And then later James is talking to Michelle and Davon, and he's like, you know, I was about to say something like, don't have a backbone. Man, who put you up? It's like, James, you just don't understand. It's like, that's not what gives you a backbone in Big Brother. Like, you made someone else's move for them. That's the opposite of having a backbone in this game. You know what I mean? Like, it's a fundamental lack of understanding of how this works. You know what I mean? It just is.
Despite these complaints, Taryn. Despite these complaints, though, about James, is he really in that bad of a position going forward next week, Taryn? Because I feel like he still won't be the number one target, will he?
In a house of suck.
Well, I was about to say, it should be noted that when Frank says that, Frank is now talking about, hey, Bridget, next week, if I'm out of the game, here's the people you got to nominate, James and Nicole. He's doing his best to throw Nicole under the bus to Davon and Zakiya. He wants to put a target on James and Nicole, and I think that James is somebody who is a lot more vulnerable than Nicole is. I think that if Paulie has any say in it, if James and Nicole are in danger, it's going to be James that goes. So I think that he's in danger from Bridget's end to some extent, because he does have the Natalie connection, which may help him out. But I think that we could be looking at somebody like James being the target after Davon, at least from Paulie's end. And Paulie's control over the house has no end in sight. With Victor coming back in, he is given a lot of power, and it's going to take a lot to unseat him from that power. And I think that James is going to be coming up pretty quickly on his hit list.
Right? I mean, he's an endurance comp beast, willing to make big moves, and is currently in a showmance. I mean, how does he not see that he's a big target? That's
and
my
he's getting rid
question.
Of the biggest meat shield above him. You know what I mean? Like, taking out Frank is dumb on so many levels. Not only is Frank a bigger competitive threat than you, he's one of the only other vets. He's the only other male vet. You know, like, I always talk about this. Brian Heidick, not a good human being, but a great Survivor player, always talked about you want to try to get yourself in a majority every way a majority exists. And that basically means, like, you need to work with those four vets. You have to. There's no situation where these people should be going after each other. The fact that they can't make it work is insane. Everyone's trying to double dip, and they're getting caught. Like, Frank tried to deal too many places, got caught quickly. Davon did it. Now Nicole's doing it. it only furthers to, you know, emphasize what people fail to recognize, which is how underrated a game Andy played again. You know what I mean? That you can, it's very difficult to do that, to play multiple sides when people are paying attention. You know what I mean? But this is what people are trying to do this season, and it keeps backfiring over and over again.
The other thing I wanted to bring up really quickly is that James brings a lot of this on himself. Like, he doesn't, it's like Davon said, why are we entertaining this guy? Why is James acting like he's not going to nominate Frank right before the nomination ceremony? And then right now, he knows he's about to be evicted. The veto's already taken place. And he still won't be honest with him. And he knows the truth is eventually going to come out. Like, it just seems like he's lying just for the sake of lying. Frank is a guy who will respect you if you say, you know what, man, I love you. You're a great guy, but I can't beat you. You know, I got to get you out of the house right now. He would accept that. But James just won't tell him that, and that's why he's in hot water now.
The biggest piece of advice I could give to somebody playing this game is do not tell unnecessary lies, because they will come back to bite you, and it's just stupid. There's no reason to do it, and I'm on board 100% there, Brent. Alex, you had something to say.
Oh, so you're saying nurses shouldn't say they're school teachers, Jordan? That's not needed.
That's,
I thought that was a staple.
You know, like, it's just stupid stuff. Like, I don't get it. Don't get it.
Like, well, Nicole didn't tell a lie this past weekend, but she said something that was totally unnecessary when she told Frank that Davon said that she wanted to go after Frank before she went after Victor. And, of course, that came back to bite her in the ass right away. And Corey, of all people, correctly points out to Nicole, you really shouldn't have said that. Yeah. You really shouldn't. Why? Why are you going to Frank? Frank already hates Davon. He wants her out of the house. He can't hate her more than he currently does right now. Telling him that does absolutely nothing for you and will only come back to bite you in the ass later on.
Let's jump to somebody that I think people want to know about, and I'm surprised we're almost an hour into this thing and he hasn't really come up at all. And that's Victor. Victor came back into the house.
Who?
Right? He came back into the house. He had a huge target on his back when he was in there the first time. But from what I've been seeing and hearing, and based on how things have gone this week, it seems like he's adjusted back into the house pretty well. So, Taryn, what's the latest on Victor? What's he doing right now? Who is he close to? And do we think he can make it a few weeks in this house?
Yeah, basically exactly, you know, what we talked about on Friday when we found out that Victor is coming in the house is what happened. Paul pulled him aside. He told him about Polly. He told him that Frank was the enemy and said, hey, just lie low, follow my lead. And that's exactly what Victor's been doing. You know, Brent and Alex speculated that he would cause some friction with James and Natalie. They whined to me before the episode. They were like, don't bring it up in the podcast. Nobody wants to hear about it. It's already played out. We're too ashamed. That hasn't happened at all.
Oh, we did not say that. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm sure I whined to you, Taryn.
Lies
that sounds
they
like...
They absolutely whined. They didn't say they were ashamed, but they
I
whined.
I said it doesn't make for what he has been doing, to hear you talk about how great you are, Taryn. That's what I said.
All right, we'll keep bringing it up while I go on. What he has been doing is he's been attaching himself to Nicole again. He's been kind of third-wheeling it with Nicole and Corey. And not causing, you know, necessarily some problems, but Nicole's been talking to him like if you liked somebody in the house, would you tell them? Like some weird stuff goes on between Victor and Nicole. That was always the case in the house. So I think that's another place he might land if Paul ends up cutting him or doing loyal to Victor anymore. But really, apart from that, he hasn't really been doing much. He's just been lying low and saying, yeah, I'm with the dudes.
Interesting. Okay,
and,
so go ahead,
way,
Alex.
Just want to chime in and say some breaking news right now. Corey and Nicole are having a fight because Corey got in the room and didn't immediately tell Nicole the number, and Nicole feels like Corey isn't being truthful with her, and that's obviously a sign that she cares more about Corey than Corey cares about her, which is absolutely true.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so there we go.
Boy, she is thirsty. Can
it's
we
very,
just
it's very typical,
I hope
too.
This,
I hope this Victor thing happens. Like, I hope Corey somehow leaves, and or they fight and break up, and then she goes with Victor, because that would be the best thing ever.
That would be totally amazing. Expected, given her history in the Big Brother house, it would be totally expected.
Oh my God, this is amazing, because what happened was she wanted Corey to tell her, Corey didn't tell her, and Victor told her first.
The plot, she thickens.
I love it.
No, but you know what? Honestly, though, good for Nicole. Like, if I was Nicole, and you have these two good-looking dudes that are giving you attention, like, who's going to turn that down? Like, if I was in there and two good-looking girls were giving me attention like that, well, you saw what happened.
We know, Jordan.
You know. Like, you're going to give in to that.
You read that book already.
Right? So, I mean, I would hope that I wouldn't do it on a second time, but, I mean, like, I can't really blame Nicole. And, I mean, I understand it's frustrating to watch, but at the same time, like, she's human, right?
I guess. But let me ask this. What I have seen Pauly make jokes about putting up Davon and Zakiya. Is it a joke? And what the hell has happened to their relationship? They seem a little bit not quite as good as they were before the feeds went off on Thursday. So did I miss something, or what's been going on in that area?
Anybody? Alex, Taryn, yeah, anything. Taryn.
Pauly is getting pretty tired of the jealousy thing. You know, it's been happening a lot. I believe at one point he said, like, Zakiya is somebody I could imagine dating, but, like, we couldn't do the long-term thing because she's a bit too jealous. And I think that there was something that kind of he got set off, like, oh, I'm really annoyed at her. I'm willing to put her on the block. It's kind of up in the air as to whether or not he means it. Like, is he really going to nominate Zakiya anytime soon? Probably not. But he's definitely putting work in to show other people that he's not super close to her and that he's willing to put her on the block.
Yeah, it was just this comment Zakiya made about how, like, college is easier for student athletes, and really upset
Right,
Pauly,
right.
And,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
really, really pissed him off. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, a hot button, because obviously Pauly was a student athlete. You know what I mean? So it hurts him.
It is easier.
We talk about Jordan.
But, like, come on, Pauly, dude, you're getting your school paid for. Partially. Is that not easier than other college
Jordan,
students?
Okay.
That
hey,
aren't?
That's not. Hey, that's not. That's not accurate. That's not fair. All right.
It's just. I'm sorry. I'm Team Zakiya on this one. I think that Pauly. Again, this just goes to show Pauly's ego is the size of Staten Island. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yes, that's why I'm further annoyed at the fact that this twist is not a coup d'etat, which I know you guys hate, but, I mean, I only see Pauly being eliminated by way of some twist like that. I mean, he is so protected from where I'm sitting watching the house. I don't even know who you could put him on the block with that would get him evicted at this point. It's the same thing with Derek. Like,
well, let's talk about this. Let's look at the alliance structure in the house right now. So, Taryn, what does Pauly have surrounding him that makes him so well-protected in this game at this moment?
So, basically, what he has is the Showmance Alliance, which is himself, Zakiya, Nicole, and Corey. Then on the side, he has Paul, who now has Victor. So, he's got another kind of, like, force to move himself, Zakiya, to some extent. Zakiya's not really involved in that, but Zakiya is just an add-on to wherever he goes, basically. So he has that as well, and then he also has this thing where James sort of thinks that they're bros as well, this guy's thing where they've talked about making sure the numbers are even so that the girls can't get them out. So he's got this guy's thing, he's got Paul and Victor, he's got Nicole and Corey, and the fact that Davon should be the person that is figuring all of this out, but Davon is focused on Nicole instead of Pauly, and Pauly is the power structure, and he is invisible to Davon's radar and invisible to Frank's radar at the moment. So nobody is going after him, and he's sitting on top of all of these alliances.
And he's in a position where he's making, you know, he's going to bed Saturday night saying these things like, I'm kind of not into Zakiya that much anymore. I'm kind of over it. And then he wakes up Sunday morning. Zakiya's like straddling him, trying to get his attention and stuff. So it's really, it's not just that he has all these people. It's also the nature of the relationships where they want to be with Pauly a lot more than he really needs any one of them.
Right.
So where, who is with Daevon at this moment, Alex? Is she all by herself? Is Zakiya still there? Is anyone there?
Zakiya's still, you know, a close friend and, I guess, confidant, but she's also... Zakiya is, you know, playing this game pretty emotionlessly, I guess you would say, for lack of a better term, except when it comes to Pauly, really. Because she does seem like she's ready to distance herself from pretty much any one of her quote-unquote friends in this game at any point. She certainly, you know, we certainly saw the girls do that with Tiffany. They were in a tight, you know, final five deal with her, and that went away pretty quick. Michelle distanced herself, Zakiya distanced herself. And you do get the feeling that Zakiya would be able to distance herself from Daevon, regardless of how it looks, you know what I mean, if Daevon were to find herself as the target next week.
And then what's going on with Nicole and Corey then? I mean, other than this, prior to this fight, Brent, are they, so they're with the Showmance Alliance. Is there any, have they reached out to anybody else, or are they kind of just doing their own thing right now?
Well, I mean, they're doing their own thing right now. I'm actually encouraged to hear about this fight right now, because watching Nicole and Corey has gotten so utterly boring for me, and it's gotten to the point where it makes me dislike Nicole, like, just because I can't stand her thirst, if you know what I'm talking about. I had a question. I can't remember what it was. Oh, I do remember now. Not that I want to throw shade, you know, but I do remember someone on this podcast talking about how the women were so smart this season, and the guys represented like the five dumbest people in the house. I wanted to ask that person if you still believe that a woman will ultimately be the winner of this season, because from where I'm sitting, I don't see it happening.
You know, all I can say is I really hope so, because I think if Corey and that level of casting represents where we're going to stoop to try to have the only intelligent people be female, then next season we're looking at like the Special Olympics of Big Brother.
All right.
Oh no.
Well,
so I don't know. It's tough. I do think the women this season are smarter. I think they probably have higher IQs across the board. It's frustrating to me to watch them throw all that away for lack of emotional intelligence. You know what I mean? Like, a couple of these girls are choosing not to be intelligent in respect to a couple of these boys. It's frustrating.
I mean, I don't know. Taryn, what's your take on this? I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's just like basically everything that could have gone wrong to force these girls into this situation kind of has happened, because I was feeling so good about the Fatal Five. Then obviously the whole Tiffany thing happened. Now these showmances have kind of ruled the roost. So is there any hope for these girls in this house?
I do think there is. I think that Nicole still has a decent shot at winning this game. I think that somebody like Zakiya could easily kind of, coast to the end. I think that, not that she's necessarily coasting, but I think that she can make it there just because she's not particularly threatening. I wouldn't call it coasting, but it's basically what she's doing. I think that even somebody like Bridget, who once Frank goes, she's still a target, but are people really going to follow through on pulling the trigger on her? I'm not sure. I think that Bridget is somebody who could also make it to the end. If she wins a few comps down the road, gets some respect, she could also, you know, kind of just pull it out in the end. So I don't think that they're necessarily screwed. I think Day's the only one that's really screwed at this point. The rest of them still have decent shots, and I think that the only way that the girls are really going to lose their chance is if the guys really, really stick together and don't vote each other out from this moment on.
Alex, I know we talked a little bit in the pre-show. You talked about this on Twitter. Let's discuss Big Meesh, or James and the Giant Meesh, if
there
you will.
Over.
So you don't think she can win this game.
Yes.
Nope.
So why are you why does Michelle have no shot to win this game? Because she just won the veto. She understands this game. It seems like she
does
have
I think that's debatable.
Well, she's a fan of this game at the very least. Okay. Does she understand people? Maybe that's a little bit different. So what's why exactly are you so anti-Big Meech?
Well, you know, it's not necessarily that I – well, she is not she's really not a very nice person a lot of the time on feeds. And honestly, I think in order to win this game – you at least have to be capable of faking being nice to people, and that just doesn't seem to be something she has any interest in learning how to do, trying to do, spending time like developing a skill at. Like, it's not just that she's bad at faking being nice or she doesn't want to fake being nice. It's just the fundamental – she doesn't understand why she should do it. You know what I mean? It's a lack of getting what – propels people to actually win this game. You can understand the structure of this game and how the weeks work and how the comps are structured and who's won what and what are the names of the former players and where do they live and who's cute and all that stuff. But if you don't get how people function and how they work and what their emotional needs are and why they need them and why this girl is crying right now and why it's maybe in your best interest to apologize, then you can't convince a jury. I'm sorry. I've seen enough hours and enough weeks of this girl on feeds to tell me that she is not someone who can win a jury, a Big Brother jury. She's just not. One name Taryn didn't mention that I'm really high on that I wasn't before is Natalie, though. I'll tell you that. This right. Just James's HOH has actually been much better for Natalie than for James because it's an opportunity now with James being the decision maker for Natalie to be ingratiated into conversations with the girls that weren't talking to her before. The Nicoles and the Michelles and the Zakias suddenly, because they want to know what's up with James, are having conversations with Natalie and learning like, oh, Natalie's actually kind of a nice girl. And, you know, today Michelle was just going on and on about how much she doesn't like Bridget. And Natalie's like actually being cool and like listening to Michelle go on and on for hours on end. And she's the only person that's entertaining that. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that'll propel Natalie forward in this game, even if James were to go in the next couple weeks, I think.
And are the girls accepting Natalie? Like, is she doing a good job of this, Alex? Do you think that she could find herself into an actual alliance? Like, could this showmance alliance, which was supposed to be five, could the six kind of team up? Could you see that happen?
Well, that's possible, but I almost wonder if she would be somebody that people look at as, hey, if we get – before it was a situation of let's get rid of Natalie so we can bring James closer back to us and refocus him. I wonder if going forward it won't be a situation of, oh, right, James can win competitions. Let's get rid of James and then we can bring Natalie into the fold now. You know what I mean? So I think she's kind of jumped him in terms of the hierarchy of that showmance in value in the perception of other people.
Okay. One thing I wanted to touch upon was this stipend gate issue. Brent, did you read about this last night?
Yeah, I thought it happened the night before last.
Or night before, maybe I read about it last night. So okay.
Okay. Yeah, like it's something about like Frank let it be known to the house that he gets a flat fee for entering the Big Brother game, and then a flat fee if he makes the jury. Independent of any prize money that they might be awarded on down the line, which is different from how the regular people are in the game in that they get a stipend every week. I think it's something like $750 a week or something like that.
Yeah.
Every week that they're in the game. Obviously, this is why people want to make jury, because once you are in jury, you're guaranteed the entire length of the game, the entire 99 days, you're guaranteed to be paid for. So Frank exposing this... I think he told Bridget, and I don't know, did he tell anybody else? Because if he didn't tell anybody else, then that could help Bridget on down the line against the other vets if she ever needs a chip to play.
Yeah, Taryn, do you know that?
He told Michelle, and that's why Nicole got upset, because she was like, oh, he's using it as a strategy. Production should be shutting this down.
Yeah, Nicole was the one who was really saying, like, production shouldn't allow him to do that.
So Taryn, has anybody – I know they had this meeting last night. Has anybody even, considered this thought of voting out Frank? Does Frank have any hope of staying in this game outside of the round-trip envelope?
No, not at the moment. There was some talk before the whole house meeting thing was going on where Polly was considering taking Bridget out first, but after the house meeting, Polly was like, I can't do it anymore. He's stirred up too much crap. He's got to go.
Yeah, his house meeting was really horrible for Frank, and he's been really mad about it all day today because he really felt like James and Michelle were telling him the only way the house will – he doesn't feel like he has any information, so he feels like when people tell him to do something and that the house is behind it, he's got to go with it. He felt like James and Michelle were saying the only way that the veto can possibly be used on you is if we get the entire – you know, decision-making group, as it were, the remnants of the eight-pack plus the people they trust now up here to deliberate and decide that that's something we agree on doing. So Frank thought that was his option. I mean, that's pretty much what James and Michelle told him. And James literally later just implied it was all a joke. So it's really frustrating. Like, this is Frank's game on the line. And he made a move that it turns out was really bad for him. And he said, I don't like house meetings. This isn't something I would have done. But they coerced him into pretty much ruining his game and then played it off like, oh, well, we were just kidding. So you can understand why Frank is pretty pissed right now. Pissed!
And I get it, too, and especially with OTEF, like, all of the things lining up.
Yeah, we didn't even bring that up.
Clown shoes.
Yeah, that the veto was OTEV, which, of course, Frank famously lost to Dan during Big Brother 14, and now apparently, was he in the final two again this time? I know he was in, like, the top three, so I thought he was anyway. I don't know. Whatever it was, he lost OTEV again, and it's likely going to lead to his exit again.
And yeah. Michelle was throwing shade, being like, oh, man, you lost to somebody from Michigan again. Now I'm in the club with Dan Giesling as people who beat you in OTEV.
Oh, my God. I actually didn't hear that, really. I know she was celebrating afterward, but, yeah, that little celebration was a bit much. That was actually what got Paulie a little anti-Michelle and anti-the girls for a little while because he thought that the girls were really being very cocky, which they were.
Well, it's good for Michelle. She should enjoy any, you know, category where she can lump herself in with Dan Giesling, because winner of Big Brother will not be one of them.
Okay. All right. You have called your shot on that one, boy.
Sure have.
All right.
Okay.
Prove me wrong, Michelle.
All right. All right.
I'm totally on board with that. I've thought that, like, Michelle is Michelle in the final two. There's just no way. Like, nobody respects her in the house. Nobody respects her game. Nobody respects her personality. There's no way she's winning in the end.
I mean,
unless she doesn't need your turnaround, which I don't see.
Right. I mean, I feel like I've watched enough. You can observe a person, one person in their natural state for long enough where you feel like you have a good read on a person. And I feel like I've gotten there with Michelle.
Right.
The vast majority of her conversations are some kind of negative, have a negative vibe to them. And people just don't, you know, it depends on who you're in there with. If you're in there with a lot of people who kind of, you know, bounce negativity off each other and feed off it, that's great. But not everyone in the house is like that. In fact, the very small percentage of people are like that, and some people are very adamantly not like that, for Bridget being one of them. You know, she can't stand that kind of stuff. So even though she's no angel herself, I mean, the fact remains that there are a lot of people who are just not going to vote for you at the end. And if you're starting to accumulate those people in week four or week five, it's terrible.
I love it that it's like a window into the souls of both of you guys, where Alex is like adamantly like, she's not going to win, I've called my shot, whereas you go to Taryn, he's like, oh, I agree with you, well, you know, unless something changes on down the line. So, you know, like, Taryn's like much more cautious than Alex is when giving his proclamations here about what's going to happen.
Well, sorry, because Rachel Riley won Big Brother. Like,
she did.
I'm very
right?
aware.
Oh, my God. She was a winner from the start. Rachel, I love you.
Like, anything can happen.
Well, that's the thing. If you get there, you know, if you're Rachel and you get there with Portia, but I look at the field right now, and I don't see a Portia there for Michelle. You know, Michelle is the Portia for someone else.
Also, comparing Rachel Riley to Michelle, I think that's
bad form, Taryn. Bad
yeah,
form.
Yeah, yeah. Come on. I mean, Rachel.
It wasn't a comparison. I was saying that, like, crazy things have happened in Big Brother.
I'm just bugging you, Taryn. It's okay. I gotta throw you under the bus again, because I threw Alex under the bus this week. Next week it will be Brent. It's just everybody
yes.
gets their turn.
Thank you.
Okay. Quickly before we start to wind things down, guys, I just want to get your take on. You know, we didn't have really much time to do our usual segments this week because of the breaking news and the constant, having that come back into discussion of the twist and everything. I want to get your quick take on the stock watch for this week. If you got to buy somebody stock the most, right now. Basically, who is in the best position in the house is what I want to know from your guys' perspective. And I want to compare this next week to see if that person is in either a much worse position or the worst position in the house moving forward. So, Alex, I'll start with you. Whose stock are you buying the most based on their position in the house right now?
Okay, so the person who I think is in the best position, and I don't think it's really that close right now, is Pauly. But I'm going to treat this like an actual stock watch because I think Pauly would be really expensive. Like, each share of Pauly right now is going for a ton of money, and I don't want to pay that. So I'll buy some cheap shares of Natalie and wait on and sit on them and let them grow and mature and see where I'm at in a few weeks.
See, that's smart. It's like, you know, you, instead of buying Apple stock, you bought Nintendo stock before Pokemon Go came out, and then now it's right. Gonna, you know, it's going to skyrocket.
Nailed it.
Okay, Brent, who are you for the whose stock are you buying right now?
Well, I'm going to use my time to bitch about him mostly, but his game is doing very well right now, and that's Paul. Paul, I was watching him on the show last night going, like, he's become like George W. Bush, you know, like he's the decider. Somehow he became the decider and everyone else is just one of his minions. Watching him in that meeting with James, like, okay, James, this is who's going to be nominated. This is what you're going to do. This is what's got to happen this week. I'm like, shut up! Who the hell are you and who let you in the club? Like, you were on the other side of the house forever, and suddenly you've ingratiated yourself with Pauly and a few other people, and all of a sudden you think you're running things. Like, sit down! But aside from the fact that his annoyance at me, I will say that Paul is playing a moderately good game at this point.
Okay, moderately good. There we go. Taryn, you got the last word in, my friend. Whose stock you mind the most right now?
Well, I mean, Paul is doing all of the work for Pauly. I think that Pauly is the person who has improved the most since last week, and if that is the criteria, then I am absolutely buying for Pauly. I think that he has skyrocketed with Victor coming into the house. He has Pauly doing all of his work, including getting him safe with Victor, getting James to him. I think that Pauly is by far in the best position and will probably continue to be moving forward.
Okay. Let's get you guys in the chat room to start brainstorming some hashtag ideas. Alex, any final words on tonight? Anything you wanted to touch upon that we did not talk about this evening?
No, I don't know. But it's just, yeah, I mean, you know, to continue what Taryn said, yeah, you've got, you know, Paul is kind of, you know, I made this comparison at one point, I think on Sunday night, but yeah, Paul is like Jabba the Hutt, or no, Pauly is like Jabba the Hutt, and Paul is like the little weasel, like, laughing on the side. And now you've got Victor, who's, like, I don't know, like his weasel. Like, it's pretty ridiculous. How you've got, like, a train and then, like, a wagon hitched to it and then, like, a much rustier, dilapidated wagon hitched to that, basically.
You know you know who Victor is? He's, like, the guy with the weird, like, tail around his head who, like, Luke Jedi mind trick, because he'll believe anything. He really will. He'll believe
Why'd
anything.
Why'd you let this guy in?
Yeah. Right, exactly. Like, he, oh my gosh. Like, Victor is just, it's amazing to me how soft of a landing spot he landed in, but he's doing all the right things at this point, it seems like, except for eating the house out of House and Home, which I was glad to see people are still annoyed by.
That's right. That's still the thing that could land Victor in trouble, is that he just can't stop eating all the food.
I love it. Okay, Brent, any final thoughts on this evening or things you wanted to talk about that we didn't get into?
Me? No. Trying not to be – what? I thought he said Brent. Did he say – but did he say me or did he say Taryn?
I don't know. I said Brent.
No, sorry.
No.
My connection is lagging.
Oh, right. Hush up, Taryn. I'm talking. I think I've bitched about everybody who I want to bitch about. Like, honestly, this season is annoying me, and I don't really remember. I'm trying to think, like, last season, was I this annoyed by people? And I don't think I was. Like, I think I really respected the games that were going on in the house, and even the people who weren't playing good games like Jackie, I still liked on a personal level and were rooting for. This season, I'm honestly looking at the field going, I personally care about none of these people, and I hate you all.
Oh man, big words from Brent Wagamot there. Taryn, if your connection is not lagging still, if you could chime in with your final thoughts of the evening, my friend, feel free. The floor is yours.
Yeah, I feel pretty much the same way. You know, I hope every season to go in.
Oh no, did we lose Taryn?
Not a bunch of nonsense. Are you?
Keep going.
You're
not
hearing me.
You're back.
Anyway, just tune into my American Ninja Warrior podcast. I've got a great guest for you this week on reality TV wrap ups. And thank you for listening.
Wow, there we go. The shameless plug from Taryn. Go listen to the American Ninja Warrior podcast with Taryn and Lita.
I didn't think it was shameless.
Lots of fun. I'm gonna say it was shameless because Taryn at the end was like, "Thank you for listening out by," and he was like, just trying to get out of there really quick.
He's trying to get it in before his internet kills him.
I have no
idea. That's a good call.
Yeah, I had no idea who was. just bugging you, Taryn. So go to robeswebsite.com/rehapups if you want to subscribe to that feed. You'll get Taryn and Lita's show. You will get this show. You will get the MTV Challenge Rehap-Up show with Ali and Brian, which is great. The Bachelor Rehap-Up, tons of great podcasts that are all from friends of Rob Has a Podcast. So check that out if you haven't already. If you want to subscribe to this feed only, though, you can also do that if you want to go to robiswebsite.com/rehappyhour. We're doing this each and every week throughout the rest of the summer. Every Monday night we'll be here live doing this if you're new to the show. So go on there, subscribe on iTunes if you haven't done so already, and subscribe on YouTube if you haven't either. Give this video a thumbs up if you liked it and a thumbs down if you didn't like it. But actually, please don't, because that's not great. Now, hashtags for tonight. I have a bunch of random numbers. I have hashtag thirsty. Let's see. There's nothing really that is really appealing to me. I like the bridge, hashtag bridge to Terabithia, because that's kind of what we talked about throughout this this podcast, was that twist.
Bridget to Terabithia?
Bridget to Terabithia. Ooh, I like that. I wish Bridget would have.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I think that's pretty good. We didn't even say that, but I think that's so good. We did now. So I think we have to use it. Are we all on board with that one?
Done.
Makes you happy, dude. It's your show.
Yeah, let's go with it. Hashtag Bridget to Terabithia. Send us a tweet if you made it all the way to the end of the show and let us know what you thought of this podcast. You can follow us all on Twitter. Alex is at Alex Kidwell. Brent is at One Lucky Gay. And Taryn is at Armstrong. Taryn, not at Taryn Armstrong. I am at Jordan Parhar. And feel free, please leave some comments on robiswebsite.com as well. I always love it when you guys leave comments there, and I read all of them. Appreciate your feedback. If you have any things you want to mention or throw in there, definitely leave a comment there. You can also leave a rating and review on iTunes if you haven't done so already for a chance to win a Skype call with me at the end of the season. Again, robiswebsite.com/rehappyhour while you are there. And last but not least, guys, there is a song that I wanted to play for you. We got this emailed in from our buddy Puya on Twitter, at Puyaism. He sent in a song during Big Brother Canada 4 I think it was when it was me, Brent, and Netta is when he called. He made a song for that. So he made a song just for you guys. It's about this show.
Hi, hello, and welcome to the show. Check your lipstick because we about to go. It's your boy PZB talking about our homeboy JP and our boys the LFC. So with the LFC, JP's an elite company, breaking down all they see on the feeds. That's what we need, through before who succeed. So first we got Taryn Armstrong, homeboy's never in the wrong. Hashtag Taryn is right, unless there's Cody in sight. Then leave it to Brent to show him to the light. Next we got Alex Kidwell, homeboy's impressions are kinda swell. Old man Jerry to Polly Cali Fiore, so if you want entertainment, don't worry. And we also got Brent, who tends to rant a lot. Yeah, he rants a lot, but you gotta love Brent for, oh, he rants a lot. Yes, he rants a lot. Brent, we like it, so keep your rants alive. We love your rants a lot, but he tends to rant. Brent Walgamon, Brent Walgamon.
And that's it. That is it.
Wow.
That was great. So shout out to Puya. That was a great great song, man. That Absolutely. Was awesome. So thank you very much to Puya. And we'll add a hashtag LFC. That's what he's dubbed you guys, I guess. The LFC, the Live Feed correspondence to the Live Feed crew.
Live Feed
crew. So there we go. Live Feed crew. So there you go. We'll add that to the hashtags for tonight. All right, guys. That's going to do it for this edition of the Happy Hour. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will see you next week. Don't forget to tune into Rob as a Podcast on Wednesday and Thursday after the live episodes. And, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you then. For Alex Kidwell, Brent Wolgamott, and Taryn Armstrong, I'm Jordan Parhar. Hashtag Bridget to Terabithia. Hashtag LFC. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
The theme song of the Reality TV Happy Hour is written and performed by Ryan Elder. Check out more of his work at ryanelder.music.com.